Welcome to Library Voices SC, the podcast of the South Carolina State Library. I am Curtis Rogers, Communication Director, and it's great to have our author today, Lorna Hollifield, who is author of Tobacco Sun. This is her first novel, and she lives in South Carolina, but is originally from North Carolina, but we'll go ahead and claim her as a South Carolinian.
Well, thank you for that.
Lorna is going to be presenting at our Speaker at the Center series today, and this kicks off our next series this year, and so it's great to start out with her talking about her first novel, Tobacco Sun. So welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself and about the novel.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. There's so much of me in the novel, so it's funny that you asked this question together, because I feel like there's a lot of my personality in the novel. None of the facts are autobiographical at all, but the personalities of the two sisters who mainly narrate the novel have a lot in common with me. I feel like when I'm feeling confident and sassy and like I can conquer the world, that's the Sidra in me. I'm definitely not as mean as Sidra. Sidra has an ugly side that I wouldn't like to think I don't have.
And you know what? That name Sidra also has kind of a malicious sound to it. You know,
I thought so too.
And Jimmy Lynn is the other sister. And I love those names. How'd you come up with those names?
Jimmy Lynn's the other sister. And she's the more nice sister. She's a little bit more insecure. And you know, I have parts of my personality that are like her as well. But Jimmy Lynn's name... they're both named after their father. So Jimmy Lynn is named after her father, James Leonard, and Sidra is named after her father, Sid. And, you know, Sid is definitely the villain in the book. And for some reason, I don't know, just, you know, I thought of Insidious. I thought of Sinister. Mm-hmm. And so those names kind of came to me. And James Leonard, I just thought, how Southern is that? Mm-hmm. I mean, to have two names and just, and Jimmy Lynn, how Southern is that?
Oh, I know. It's perfect.
So, thanks. It's just, I think that the names reflect the culture really well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's how I came up with them and kind of split my sassy side and my insecure side down the middle and kind of formed their personalities and then plugged in the events.
Cool. Well, one of the things I read about you preparing for this recording for our podcast is that you've been a travel blogger. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I started my professional writing journey in Asheville, and I did some different blogs for different websites up there. I even got to do an exclusive piece on the Travelocity Gnome, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was such a big deal at the time because, you know, there have been all the commercials with the Travelocity Gnome. And he actually has handlers. It's really great. Like, they were really weird about letting me hold him. Uh-huh. And they buckle him into the car when they drive him around. Uh-huh. And he has two people that travel with him. But I got to hold him and kiss him and touch him and all that and blog about it. And then I moved to Charleston and started my own company. And I did marketing and writing. Mm-hmm. For different businesses and tourist destinations down here in South Carolina, and continued doing that until I got my book deal. So I've always enjoyed writing about experiences and people, always.
Did you think you'd ever go into the novel arena, or is it something you always wanted to do?
Always wanted.
Really?
There was part of me who didn't know if it would ever actually happen, but there was a much bigger part that knew I had to make it happen. And so I've been writing, you know, I've been a creative writer my entire life. I've been writing fiction since I was old enough to hold a pen when I was spelling all the words wrong at 5 years old. this is actually the third novel I've written.
Okay.
I finished my first one when I was like 22. And it's, you know, when I look back at it, I mean, it's okay. It's, I've grown and I've learned the structure of novel writing a lot better since then. And I'm very stubborn, so I have not taken tons of writing classes or tons of workshops or things like that. I just kind of play with it until it works. And so then Tobacco Sun came along, and I was like, this is the one. This is the one that will make it. And so I've really been trying to get published for close to 10 years. And finally, last summer, a small publisher, Pen Name Publishing, took a shine to Tobacco Sun and looked at me and said, this is our anchor book next year. This is it.
Wow,
this is the
very
one.
Cool. What a compliment.
It was a huge compliment. I was like crying, crumpled up in the floor. My husband runs in. He thought a family member had died. Uh-huh. It was kind of pitiful. He was like, is it our grandparents? Which one? Mm-hmm. Which, like, freaking out. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to smile and give him a thumbs up. So, but yeah, it was a good day.
Well, one of the things that I think is fascinating about, and by the way, this is a really attractive book cover.
Thank you.
How did you start out with the name Tobacco Sun, or did it finally come to you at some point while you were writing?
I get...
Because this takes place in Tobaccoville, North Carolina.
Right. I kind of get concepts before I get the actual plot. I see characters first, and then after that, I get titles really quickly. Mm. And I've spoken to other writers, and they're like, you know, I don't choose my title till the very end, but it's almost... like I built a story around this concept, and I was seeing secrets in the tobacco, and I was seeing, I'm very visual when I write. I kind of see it play out like a movie as I'm writing. And I just kept seeing the sun shining through on these characters' faces, and I don't know, I was like, this novel's going to be called Tobacco Sun. And I started creating kind of a metaphor around it. So I actually came up with that really early. It started out as I was going to call it Tobacco Sunsets. And then I thought that sounded a little corny, like a little bit like a soap opera or a telenovela. Yeah. Like, I'm not in,
not feeling
you
it.
Know, yeah, Mexican cinema right now. This is a novel. And so I was like, it just needs something a little shorter. And so I dropped Sets and Tobacco Sun. Was born.
It works. I mean, it really, you know, and I will admit that I have not read this yet, but I did look at the preface and prologue and, you know, just looking through it, and I thought, and when I saw Sidra's name, I thought, ooh, you know, something about that even pulled me in. And
she's
so,
spicy.
Yeah, I started reading the first couple of pages, and it's, you know, it's one of those things that I'll probably continue because it's pulled me in already just in the first couple of pages.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment.
And, I mean, that's what you have to do as a writer, you know. It's like, and this is a murder mystery. How else would you classify it?
It is, I wouldn't actually classify it as a suspense novel, even though it has such a huge suspense element. I would probably, I mean, in the, I would call it family epic.
Oh, okay.
Because it takes place, I mean, there's like 20 years of secrets that start pouring out. And all of the trouble in this book is so deeply rooted in this family's history in Tobaccoville and the kind of people they are. And even the kind of town Tobaccoville is. And there's this one passage that I really love, and I was talking about how Tobaccoville is just a patch of dirt, and and it's not a beautiful place. And then I say, but it does it on purpose. It knows that it's terribly underdressed, and it's not good enough to become a Charleston or a Savannah. It wants to remain meager. And it just, that's the people there, too. And that's who those characters are. And in the South, you know, these salt-of-the-earth people are what comprise the South, and there's a lot of happiness, but there's also a lot of turmoil, and there's a lot of strife and a lot of struggle that's kind of associated with small towns in the South.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's financial or it's just, you know, Southerners are great people. I'm proud to be a Southerner, but they hide things. And I was just picturing them hiding all of their skeletons in the tobacco leaves. And so everything about this family, I always say, kind of starts creeping out of the tobacco leaves and coming to light. And it's ultimately about them finding redemption and finding some hope. So, yeah, that's what it's about.
And the time frame, you've got 1947. What drew you to that time period?
I wanted the 40s, but I wanted the war to be over. I wanted a time where everything, like, they've been living on rations. It's been a time of uncertainty, post-depression, still gun-shy about money, and poverty is kind of still a theme. But then also new things are starting to happen, especially in the fields of, like, psychology. You're starting to get, you know, people, you're starting to have what has become like modern psychology. And a big part of the novel is Sidra's on trial for murder, and she's being interviewed by a court-appointed psychiatrist to see if she can stand trial, and we're trying to figure out psychologically what's going on with her.
And that's part of, I'll interrupt you for a second, that's part of what pulled me in. Okay. Because in the very first few pages, you address that.
That's how it opens. Yeah, like, and he's just like, Sidra, tell me why you're here. And none of it's making sense, because you can tell that there's this disconnect between what she says has happened and what she's saying to him and what we're finding out. You're kind of like, not all of this adds up. She's covering, she's hiding, or why is she, or is she just, you know, a selfish movie star? Like, what is her situation? And this book also talks about a lot of the psychological practices that have been happening to women at that time, like just institutionalizing everybody, performing lobotomies, and
using the word hysterical a lot.
Hysterical, yeah. Yes, hysterical. Hysterical women. And so the psychiatrist in the book, Dr. Garris, is kind of rejecting all that, and he's one of the first, you know, psychiatrists of that time that kind of start using group dynamics and trying to look at her atmosphere, and believes that she can actually be better than she is now. And so that's, it's kind of an underlying part of the book. It's not all about that, but during that time frame, it was just like kind of, I feel like 1947 cut off what becomes like modern science and what becomes modern times. Baseball was just integrated that year. You know, Jackie Robinson was the first player, and that happened in 1947. And so it's kind of this turning point in American history that gets really overlooked because the war's over, the 50s haven't happened yet. But right there in the late 40s, there was so much going on.
A lot of social change.
A lot of social change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to chat with you about is your writing style. Do you start with an idea and then outline, or do you just sit down every day and whatever comes to you, comes to you?
Okay, so I get characters first. That's what I've always told everybody. I mean, I was an only child for a long time, and but I'm an extrovert. And writers are known to be introverts. Only children are known to be introverts. I'm like the most outgoing person ever. And so I would literally just like make people up to talk to. I think my parents thought I was crazy. I mean, because I had, I had tons of imaginary friends. There wasn't one imaginary friend. There was like 50 imaginary friends. And I was just always talking and having a great time. And so, you know, after the concern passed and they realized I was just creative, you know, that's kind of where, I don't know, I think my character-driven fiction comes from. So I start seeing characters that I think would be really neat, and from there I just write stream of consciousness, just whatever I think they're doing or saying. And then I'll kind of put a plot with it. I'll think, okay, what situation would this person get into? What would be something that, you know, they, or, and a lot of times I'll try to pair it with something I find interesting, like a certain culture I find interesting, or a certain place in the world I found interesting, and I pick the right character to go into the setting. So I see them as two separate things, and then I kind of marry them. I'm not huge on outlines. I will literally scribble, like, in a notebook, just kind of where I think the story's going. And then I write, and as it flows, it might change the path a little bit. And then usually at the end, when I've just kind of gotten out the framework of the story, I'll go back and plug in twists where they make sense, like where I can kind of change something up or hide something or mask it. And I'll do that in the editing process. But I'm not super overly organized as a writer. I've never been. Even in school, when teachers would make me write outlines, it was like I would write the paper and then go back and do the outline according to what I'd written. Because I feel like it would break up my flow if I'm too regimented.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm a little disorganized, but it works for me.
Well, yeah, hey, if it works for you, that's what you've got to do. One of the things that we like to talk about with authors and with guests on Library Voices SC is their connection to libraries. And so, you know, what kind of importance does the library place with you, and maybe what's your personal story about libraries, any interesting things when you, you know, were young in libraries or anything like that?
I love libraries. I really do. I love the smell of them. I love the atmosphere. I love being surrounded by books because, you know, to me, it just represents thinking and connecting. And I think as human beings, we were meant to connect to other people. We weren't meant to be alone. And without the written word, how would we connect, you know, the present to the past? How would we, you know, communicate our ideas so extensively? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't, in a conversation, communicate to the level you can in a novel or even in an anthology or in, you know, even a reference book. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just so much put out there, and you need the written word to do that. And I think getting to actually touch the books is another mm-hmm. level of connection. I'm not a big Kindle fan.
Really?
I never, ever, ever, ever read digital.
Really?
I can't stand it. It drives me crazy. I feel disconnected. I don't know. I like to feel the pages in my hands. I like to make mm-hmm. little notes in the margin sometimes. Mm-hmm. Libraries, you know, offer that, and they're great meeting places for mm-hmm. communities to mm-hmm. come together, and they encourage so much good and so much connection, and you know, that's what I like. If I could change something, I mean, I would like louder libraries, but
yeah,
I know.
and some of them are becoming a lot louder.
I know.
Yeah, because a lot of them are community spaces.
Oh yeah.
I think it's interesting that you talked about not being a big fan of ebooks, because mm-hmm. I tend to be both. I like uh-huh. some things I like about ebooks, some things I like about the printed book. Mm-hmm. The one thing I love about ebooks is that I can look up a word in the dictionary right there on the screen.
That is nice.
That's like one really cool feature. And mm-hmm. also, if I have an ebook on my phone, it's with me all the time.
Right.
You know, whereas mm-hmm. picking up, but then there are some things that I really do like, you know, about flipping through the pages, and you can more easily go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's always a lot of fun. What other kind of experiences have you had with libraries? What was the local library when you were a little kid?
The local library when I was a child, I grew up in a tiny town outside of Asheville called Candler, mm-hmm. and there's a district called Inca. It's E-N-K-A. And it's not really so much a town as it is just
kind of
an area.
Crossroads.
Yeah, Inca is actually an acronym for four Dutch words. The Dutch came in and built a factory there, and then they built all these adorable tiny little brick houses
oh, wow.
across from the factory, and that's where the workers lived. And it's historical Inca village now, and I grew up in that little village.
Oh, cool.
And there's a library right next to it, the Inca Branch Library.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, you know, going to that library, and mm-hmm. it's smaller but really quaint,
uh-huh.
and it's in this really old building, and it's what you think a library should be. It smells mm-hmm. old, it looks old, it just kind of has that small town feel, and it kind of makes me feel cozy. I actually did a book signing there in my hometown.
Oh, wonderful.
A few weeks ago, and it was just like the warmest welcome, and so many people came out.
Oh, that's great.
Actually, and then one side of my family were potters. They made jugs that are in museums in North Carolina. It's
oh,
called
wow.
Penland Pottery.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked in the library, and there were pictures of my great-grandfather everywhere.
You're kidding.
When I walked in, and they didn't even know, but they were featuring that at that time because that's the Cherokee Native uh-huh. American side of my family, which I know the blonde hair and blue eyes. My dad's side's German. My mom's side, uh-huh. my mom's, you know, jet black hair, very native looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super proud of that part of my history.
Sure.
And some of it's a mystery, like I don't know everything about it, but
mm-hmm.
there were a lot of jugs and pots and things like that made, and they're in the Volk Art Museum, but they just had it in the room that I was doing my signing
in.
What a
weird coincidence. It's kind of like an omen or something.
I was like, oh my gosh, that's it was my great-great-grandfather, actually.
That's crazy.
And also, a huge coincidence is that culture is what I've kind of based my next novel on.
Ah.
It delves into that Native American side of my family. And again, the plot's completely fiction, but
mm-hmm.
the idea was stemmed from that. So I was kind of like, oh, this is confirmation. I'm writing what I should be writing right now.
Definitely, so. Yeah. Do you have a title in mind for that upcoming novel?
Yes, I do. It's called The Weeping Jug.
The Weeping Jug.
The Weeping Jug. Yeah.
I'm already getting a lot of visuals from that.
Good.
That's really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, good.
Very neat. Well, I think we're going to wrap up for now. So thank you, Lorna, for being with us today.
Aww,
we really appreciate it. And we're looking forward to your talk that you're going to give shortly at Speaker at the Center. And we'll also post links to your website and all that kind of good stuff on the Library Voices SC webpage. So thanks again for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.